Then.
Arizona News Radio jurors in the case of Tammy Smith, the woman accused of custodial interference in the disappearance of a baby, said that they wanted to adopt baby Gabriel, but it was a long, tough process.
We went and bought everything, crib, a new dress, everything for him. And here we are just, you know, to really... Was really upset about it.
A new report indicates child abuse cases in Arizona at an all-time high. The system is bloated.
We are never there. Every day, we have to think about and recalibrate how we administer this system.
A missing family of four found in a remote canyon near San Manuel.
After deputies started utilizing some very sophisticated tracking techniques, they were able to locate the missing family in a canyon.
Phoenix police arrested suspects for a 1988 murder.
We reopened the case and were able to secure a new witness.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of York Haven X Traffic, a service of Village. And you're going to find some slowing northbound on the 17 between McDowell and Camelback. Usual suspects there. Also, a car and a bike got into it. Glendale Avenue east of north of 75th Avenue. Look for a wreck. Bethany Home Road at 19th Avenue. Today's Pie Burst Wednesday at Village Inn. Stop by from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. to get a free slice of double crust fruit pie or our lemon blueberry supreme pie with dine-in purchase. Get your free slice at Village Inn today. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, our confidence is high that we'll see our first 100-degree readings by this weekend. We're 93 tomorrow with partly cloudy skies, but then Friday we're back up to 97 and into our weekend 100, if not a degree or two warmer. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently we're at 92 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. Coming up, it's the Legal Ease Radio Show with your host, Dennis Willinchek. You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
The mask of determination, intensity, and triumph. It can show up after Nash buries a go-ahead three or Gortat battles for an offensive rebound. It's your game face, and every Suns player and fan has one. This season, when you come to make some noise for the boys in orange, you better bring your game face. Catch the Phoenix Suns battle the Los Angeles Clippers Thursday, April 19th at 7:30 p.m. Great seats available at suns.com/tickets or call 1-800-4-NBA-TICKS. Your Phoenix Suns, presented by Casino Arizona. I'm back with Micah Panzik, manager of the 911 CPR program at the Arizona Department of Health Services. Does dispatch-assisted CPR really promise to save lives in Arizona?
Absolutely. We've helped reduce the time to start of CPR by a full minute at one of the largest 911 agencies in the state. A drop of this magnitude could increase survival by 7 to 10% in the communities the agency serves. We'll indeed save lives across Arizona in the months and years ahead. For more information, visit 9-1-1, cprdispatch.azshare.gov.
Independent Talk, 1100, KFNX.
Mr. Franklin, you are out of order!
When I grew up,
you're out of order!
I want to be a lawyer just like you.
You're out of order!
Good for you, son.
The whole trial is out of order!
If there's one thing America needs,
they're out of order!
It's more lawyers.
Oh. You got my pride. Yeah, that's what we need, more lawyers. This is Dennis Willinchek on Legal Ease with Jack Willinchek every Wednesday from 4 to 5, Independent Talk Radio, 1100 KFNX. Our number in the studio, 602-277-KFNX. That's 277-5369, should you wish to call in. Because today we have on with us, Jack, Senator Byron Dorgan. Senator, are you with us on the line now?
I am, yes.
Well, good to have you on our show.
And I'm glad I'm not a lawyer, given that introduction, right?
Yeah, I know. It's not very promising, is it? But, you know, I'm thrilled to have you on our show because you are a former senator for a long time from mm-hmm. North Dakota. Jack and I were just chatting. You know, we have relatives out there. My wife's sister lives out there in Minot, and her whole family lives mm-hmm. out there for many, many years, the Swenson family. And so it's... It's good to have you on. In fact, one of the relatives, I guess my niece, is a lawyer in Washington now at a firm that is dealing with oil and gas law because I guess they own a lot of farmland up there and they found oil. So I heard that everybody up in North Dakota now has oil. So tell
us
about
that. The western half of the state. Actually, it's the biggest oil play in the world at the moment, I think. It's called the Bakken Shale.
Right.
And I think there are 200 oil drilling rigs working. They drill a well a month. That's about 2,500 wells a year. And it's really interesting because they're drilling down 2 miles to find a 100-foot shale seam. And then when they find it, they find the middle third of it, and they drill out 2 miles. So they're down two and out two with the same drilling rig, and then they do hydraulic fracturing, and the oil drips, and they pull it out.
Yeah, and I guess this is something they didn't have available years ago, right?
They couldn't do it. You know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, they didn't have the technology to do it. Now they can, and it's one of the reasons that we're producing more oil now in this country than we did 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's a good thing, and good thing for North Dakota. Well, let me introduce you formally to our listening audience, if I may. As I said, we're thrilled to have Senator Byron Dorgan on. You are now retired, but I'll refer to you as Senator. Byron began his career at age 26, appointed North Dakota State Tax Commissioner, and as I understand it, was the youngest constitutional officer in the state's history, and served as a United States Senator as well as a congressman, I guess before then, for North Dakota for some 30 years before retiring in January of 2011. And Senator Dorgan was chairman of the Senate committees and subcommittees on the issues of energy, aviation, appropriations, water policy, and Indian affairs, and was one of the first politicians who spoke of the oncoming economic downturn some time ago, and is now co-chair of government relations practice for the Washington, D.C. law firm of Aaron Fox, and serves as a senior fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he focuses on issues related to energy policy. Senator Dorgan is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Take This Job and Ship It, and Reckless, How Debt, Deregulation, and Dark Money Nearly Bankrupted Our Country and How to Fix It. Currently, and one of the reasons we have Senator Dorgan on the show with us, is he's promoting a book that he's written with co-writer David Hagberg, a former Air Force cryptographer who's traveled extensively in Europe, the Arctic, and the Caribbean. And the name of the book, Senator, for those listeners that still read and go to bookstores, if you can find one, or I guess get it on Amazon or something, is Blowout. And I had a chance to look at your book, and I haven't finished it, but it's a fictional work. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you is I'm not sure how much fiction there is in the book. It's dubbed as a one-of-a-kind high-concept thriller about America's dangerous addiction to foreign oil, a dependence that could cripple our economy and our ecosystem. So I guess the first question I wanted to ask you in the time we have with you, Senator, is tell us what the book is about and why you wrote it.
Well, this is the first of a two-book series on fiction. I've not written fiction before. I've written two books previously, but it's called an eco-thriller, and we are in this country, from a reality standpoint, very vulnerable because we have too much dependence on foreign oil. And some of the money we spend on that foreign oil every day spills enough from the barrel to fund terrorism as well. So we need to be concerned about that. The book, very briefly, is this. We are right on the edge in a top-secret government facility of discovering and proving in the final experiments an ability to have a new, nearly inexhaustible source of energy that costs very, very little. Who does that threaten? Why? And how do they decide to try to destroy this new approach? Obviously, if someone is deep into oil, the derivatives in oil futures, and heavily leveraged and would lose a fortune, if something like this occurred, they would try to stop it. Saudi Arabia and others, of course, would as well. So the book is a thriller, but it's not so far from reality in terms of what we're talking about is possible in the book. We're talking about creating microbes and a language for microbes that eat their way through underground coal seams and produce methane or liquid fuel in their wake. And that's our most abundant source of energy, of course. Coal is, but we can't burn so much of it anymore because of the CO2 it emits.
Yeah, let's talk about that. First of all, the feeding microbes for methane is a fascinating issue that, again, I only came upon through my good graces of my producer, who did some research on it for me and Jack, and learned that really this is not, as I said earlier, necessarily fiction. I'm sure you're familiar with this, but in Casper, Wyoming, in the midst of the coal bed methane gas boom in the Powder River Basin, a Gillette High School student performed a simple experiment. Her name was Tiffany Clark. And by the way, on our second half hour, And I know you can't be with us, but it's too bad because we're going to have Devin Bleizeffer on, who's an editor-in-chief for yodfile.com with us, to talk to us about his coverage of this high school student. But were you aware of her experiments in this area and her findings, which we can talk about?
I'm not aware of her findings, but there are some very sophisticated experiments going on. Craig Venter, who was the co-director of the Human Genome Project with Francis Collins, he's working on developing synthetic microbes that you put underground and eat their way through coal seams. Our book goes a step further and talks about a brilliant young scientist who finds and creates a new language by which you actually communicate with microbes. And by the way, now back to reality, scientists have learned in more recent years that bacteria, for example, you and I probably have, well, we do have bacteria working in our mouth at the moment on some dental plaque, I'm sure, and they have a rudimentary language system or a rudimentary system of communicating. So, you know, the book is sci-fi, but there are things going on that are stranger than fiction and energy. We have some people right now in a national laboratory that are working on trying to create liquid fuels from thin air. That's pretty interesting as well.
Well, yeah, there's some amazing stuff going on. But real quickly, we've only got a minute or two before the break, but I just want to say, in 1999, this Tiffany Clark took chunks of coal from a local mine, and she placed them in a series of coffee cans, with some with coal bed, methane, water, some with sterilized water, some without. Anyway, she waited 6 months and recorded her findings and found that there was methane, that was released from some of this coal. And then some industrialists apparently took her findings. I think it's called Luca Laboratory. Maybe you've heard of them. And now scientists are looking into this and really expanding her findings that just started out from a little experiment at school. But anyway, the idea is that, I guess, before we take our break, conventional wisdom is that the microbial process in the coal likely takes eons to generate gas, but this Luca Laboratory is saying they're finding ways to accelerate that process. So anyway, your fiction may not be fiction is what I'm saying, and we'll return to that thought with Senator Byron Dorgan, former senator from the state of North Dakota, who's just written a book called Blowout in just a few minutes.
All right.
Thank you.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
If you have a mortgage in Arizona, there's a huge chance that you're upside down on that home. There is good news. Banks are encouraging short sales. At Renee Leach & Associates, we have the experience to help you get out from under a bad mortgage. It will cost you nothing. You can't wait. Banks are not going to allow you to short sale forever. Call 480-656-1644. Ask for me, Dave Leach, and let me help you gather the information you need to understand your options. Renee Leach & Associates, 480-656-1644, 480-656-1644, rlabrokers.com.
Did your stockbroker convince you to finance or refinance your home through his brokerage firm? Did you fully understand the terms of the loan he was selling to you? Or even worse, are you in jeopardy of losing your home? It may be possible to undo the bad loan your broker sold you and lower your monthly payments, or at least be compensated for the damages your broker caused you. Loss Recovery Center is a national network of securities arbitration experts. For nearly 20 years, Loss Recovery Center has recovered tens of millions of dollars for thousands of investors. Whether you've lost money due to a bad mortgage loan sold to you by your stockbroker, or if you've lost money in bonds, including mortgage-backed bonds, stocks, annuities, or mutual funds, call Loss Recovery Center today for a free evaluation of your situation. You may be able to recover some, if not all, of your losses. Call Loss Recovery Center toll-free at 877-466-2722. That's 877-466-2722. Toll-free, 877-466-2722. Or visit Loss Recovery Center online at lossrecoverycenter.com.
Have your voice heard. Tune into the Savage Nation. Weekdays from 5 to 7, only on KFNX.
This is Dennis Wallen Wilinchek and Jack Wilinchek here every week from 4 to 5 on Wednesdays at KFNX Independent Talk Radio. And we're talking this week for the first half hour with Senator Byron Dorgan, former senator from North Dakota. Senator, we're talking about your book, Blowout. Tell us a little bit about the plot in a little more detail, if you can.
Well, the plot is that it starts with some people trying to blow up an energy plant that would have real consequences for our energy supply. And the country recognizing that something needs to be done to provide greater energy and also national security. And the president orders a top-secret facility to be completed, and a brilliant young scientist, a 34-year-old woman named Ashley Borden, Whitney Lipton, I'm confusing my characters here,
yeah.
Goes to this top-secret facility, and they're working on developing a language for microbes that they would put in a coal seam and be able to use the most abundant resource we have, coal, and create liquid fuel from coal underground. And D.S. Woods, who is a fellow that is deep into oil contracts and heavily leveraged and will lose a fortune if this happens, decides he's got to destroy the facility. And so it goes. And it goes from the top-secret government facility to the Oval Office to Havana to Venezuela. It's a thriller, and I think people will find it interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a movie someday, I think. But let's talk about we were talking before the break about, you know, the reality of some of these premises and also, you know, the fictional aspect to it. But you now sat on the Energy Committee for or maybe you were chairman for many years. Is that right?
I was chairman of the Appropriations Energy Panel that funded all of the country's energy work. And I was the second-ranking Democrat on the Energy Authorization Committee.
So, I mean, I have to ask you right now, what is your take on the energy policy right now and the problems that we're seeing in terms of the United States becoming either self-sufficient through oil or moving to other energy sources? It sounds to me real quickly that, from my reading of it, that there was just – in fact, it's very timely. There was just an article, frankly, I think it was in Today, that could this be the death knell for coal stocks? Apparently, coal is taking a beating because the EPA is now coming up with certain regulations, as you said earlier, relating to the CO2 issue relating to coal-fired power plants, so which probably is going to be the end of any new coal-fired power plants if that goes through. I guess there's a movement in Congress to prevent that EPA ruling. But tell our audience what you see right now is what's necessary to number one, sustain this country internally, and secondly, to move away from conventional energy. How are we doing on that?
Well, two things are happening. Number one, we're finding much more oil and producing more oil, thanks to the Bakken in North Dakota and several other finds as well. And then in natural gas, the Marcellus Shale and others, there's just an abundant new amount of natural gas at very, very low prices. So when a new energy plant is built to produce electricity or an existing one is modified, it's very, very likely they will go to natural gas rather than coal as a fuel supply.
Right.
Because we have at least 100 more years that we didn't know we had at very, very low prices. But we also have to worry. I mean, some people say that it's disputable science, but the majority of the scientists think there's something happening to the climate, and we have to worry about pumping more CO2 into the air. And so that's one of the reasons there's an interest in going to natural gas as well, because it is cleaner burning.
Right. But do you think in the end that's the answer, or are these other technologies, such as we were talking about, which probably would be very expensive right now in the experimental stages,
yeah,
for example, extracting methane gas from coal, things of that nature? I mean, the problem is money, right? I mean, and the cost.
Right.
And when you have plentiful – go ahead.
Yeah, well, the answer is to do everything and do it well, but we are going to always need fossil energy. I mean, we're going to use coal, oil, and natural gas. We're going to use coal differently, but we certainly want to be less dependent on the Saudis and others for our oil. But it's also important for us to harness the energy from the sun. I mean, we get about an hour's worth of sun on this planet, gives us a year's worth of energy if we can only figure out how to harness it. And sun, wind, geothermal, there are a lot of things to do, and much more efficiency. I know a guy who says he's got a diesel engine that gets 100 miles to the gallon. And he's got some very strong financial backers. I mean, if it's true, that's pretty positive in a disruptive light, right?
So well, there's a lot of things going on. Some guy showed us after our show last week, he went on the internet, and I guess there's a guy from Australia who's now developing some kind of an engine that requires, you know, no fuel. It works on some kind of magnetic principles of some kind. Didn't you see that, Jack?
You know, I think what's going to happen is we've been on the same energy use for about a century now. But I think if you go out, well out now, 10, 25, 50 years, you know, there's this book called The Black Swan, which talks about the impact of the highly improbable.
Yeah.
For example, you didn't know and I didn't know there was going to be an internet.
True.
Or cell phones, for example. And I think what's going to happen in energy is there's going to be breathtaking changes that ultimately will provide energy from sources we don't even now or yet understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, your state, North Dakota, as I understand it, has probably the lowest unemployment rate in the country right now. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's because, again, of this shale oil business you've been talking about. So
sure.
Has it become just a boom town there?
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is everybody says, "Well, we're doing so well." We are. I mean, when it's like J. Paul Getty, when asked the definition of success, he said there are three elements to success. Number one, go to the best school you can and study hard and do really well. Then get a good job and excel at that job, and then strike oil. So you know, we struck oil in North Dakota, and good for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are boom-bust cycles. This is going to last for a while, but there is a boom cycle going on right now, and we have to be careful about infrastructure and all the things that come with a boom.
Yeah, of course. Well, is there a message, whether sub rosa or not, in Blowout that you want to convey to the public, or is strictly for entertainment?
Well, it's for entertainment, but it's also a message that there's a lot of new science and a lot of new experiments going on that very likely will change the way we use energy and the type of energy we use. And that's one of the things we wanted to communicate in the book. And I think as people read through this book, they'll understand it is a thriller. There are some characters that will go to the second book. It's the first of a two-book series.
Right.
But there are a number of characters that don't quite make it through our book, as you might imagine.
But obviously, at the end, you have to leave some of them available for the second, right?
We've got three or four good characters that people will enjoy that are going to show up in the second book. But some of them... some of them are left on dusty roads and in violent situations. But by the time we do that, people feel they deserve it.
I'm just kind of curious how you write a book with a co-writer. How does that actually work? I mean, do you do the basic script, if you will, and then he polishes it or vice mm-hmm. versa? How does that work?
No. Well, you know, I had not done it before either. Both of us have written books before that have been on the New York Times bestseller list. I have not written a book of fiction. He's written a lot of fiction. But both of us have been successful writers. And a publisher asked us to co-author a two-book series on energy and novels. And so it's in some ways like building a house, you know, stick building a house where you put up 2x4s first.
Yeah.
The architecture of the plot is what you put up first. You develop
okay.
an architecture of a plot. And then you begin adding to it and adding characters and developing as you go. But and then you share writing back and forth and editing back and forth. And you know, Hemingway once said, "Genius is in the seventh draft." Well, we never got there. But it's been a really interesting, fun enterprise for me to do, and I look forward to doing more writing.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that in the minute or two we've got left. So about your life now, you retired from the Senate, I guess, a year mm-hmm. or so ago. Mm-hmm. Did you just get tired of that life?
You know, I did it for 30 years, and it was a great, great privilege. It's very hard to become a U.S. senator, and it's even hard to leave. But what I watched people who stayed way too long,
yeah.
and I wanted to do other things. And I'm energetic and like to do other things. And so this was the opportunity. This was kind of the off-ramp for me to be able to do the things that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I started a nonprofit organization that reaches out to, it's called the Center for Native American Youth. I'm doing a lot of work with Indian children on Indian reservations that have four times the rate of suicide of other teens in the country, and we're doing teen suicide prevention and education opportunity. I'm spending a lot of time doing that. I'm writing. I'm at a bipartisan policy center. I'm half-time at a firm doing consulting work. And I'm teaching at Georgetown part-time as well. So
yeah.
I'm doing a lot of things.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And if you don't mind my asking, how old are you now?
I'm 69 years old.
Oh, so you're 69 years young, right?
But listen, I have an uncle who runs in the Senior Olympics and just won the World Games in the 100 meter at age 90 and above. He ran the 90.
That's what I said. You're still young. You're 69
years
young.
Yeah, he ran the 100 in 18.8. I'm hoping I could do that.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. You've got a lot of years ahead, and this is a good way to spend them. It sounds like you're very busy. And do you travel back to North Dakota a lot?
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So what do you think of Washington, D.C., I might ask?
It's an interesting city. I've obviously worked here for 30 years, and I'm spending time here now, and I enjoy North Dakota a lot. I mean, I grew up in a town of 300 people.
Where'd you grow up there?
South of Dickinson, about 50 miles, 60 miles, a little town called Regent.
Huh. And real
high
quickly,
school class of nine.
Yeah. Real quickly, because we're coming up on the break here, but I just want to know, what got you involved in politics?
Almost by accident. I think events more than plans often shape your life. And I was always very interested in what was going on around me in the world, and opportunities came about. And when I saw daylight, it's kind of like a football player. When you see daylight, you run to daylight.
Yeah.
I had opportunities that looked like running towards daylight for me, and I did. And I won. I was appointed by the governor to a vacancy through a tragedy that had occurred, and then I ran for the U.S. House and ran for the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story, and we honestly wish you well, and good luck on your book. The book is Blowout, and for those of you that haven't had a chance to take a look at it, you can pick it up, I'm sure, on Amazon, or if you can find a bookstore these days, you can find it in there, right?
You can download it to your Kindle, absolutely. I think people will enjoy it, and thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, Senator, and take care of yourself. Be good.
All right. Yeah, good day.
News Radio Special Report. I'm Veronica Dela Cruz. It was the happening place to be for decades. American Bandstand introduced rock and roll into the mainstream, giving millions of fans their first glimpses of stars from Buddy Holly to Michael Jackson. The program's iconic host, Dick Clark, has died at the age of 82. NBC's Chris Jansing says Clark was a beloved host and so much more.
He created the American Music Awards, produced the Golden Globes, hosted the $10,000 pyramid until it was worth $100,000, and launched this New Year's Eve tradition.
When I say New Year's Eve, do you think of any other place in the world? Yeah, you think of Times Square.
Long called the world's oldest teenager because of his youthful appearance, Clark continued performing even after he suffered a stroke in 2004. That affected his ability to speak and walk. Again, pioneering TV host Dick Clark has died at age 82. This is NBC News Radio.
There was on the news radio a 2-year-old boy hospitalized. He was pulled out of the family's jacuzzi today.
There was a 2-year-old boy whose mom basically found him in the jacuzzi. Now, we don't know if the child had fallen in.
Prescott police have reopened the 2002 murder case of a 71-year-old man.
A short while after the murder, the Prescott police received an unsigned note mailed by an unidentified person who described certain events which have become crucial to this investigation.
Logan McQuarrie, the father of missing baby Gabriel, testified again today.
Didn't like it at all. Felt pressured. At that time, I didn't really know what to think or do. I tried to get help, and nobody would help me.
The would-be mother on trial. In Southern Arizona, voters select Democrat Ron Barber, Republican Jesse Kelly for the congressional seat held by Gabriel Giffords.
Everybody's going to be looking for signs of how is Obama going to stack up against Romney.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your cave and traffic, a service of 5-Hour Energy. We still have that collision, Camelback Road at 27th Avenue. Also look for another wreck. This is Roser Road and 40th Street, and we still have that collision, car and a bike, Glendale Avenue, just east of 75th Avenue. You know that 4:30 feeling? You've hit the wall, but you got to get stuff done. That's the time for 5-Hour Energy. 5-Hour Energy, when you just got to get stuff done. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, our confidence is high that we'll see our first 100-degree readings by this weekend. We're 93 tomorrow with partly cloudy skies, but then Friday we're back up to 97 and into our weekend 100, if not a degree or two warmer. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we're at 92 degrees here in Midtown. Next news in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to Independent Doc, 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
I have the answer. Call me for this link, and you will call me back. I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient-dense, locally grown produce, and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma Culture is our name, and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601.
Greg Schulte here for Legends Cadillac in North Scottsdale. Folks, you have to check out Legends pre-owned inventory at legendscadillac.com. Now, you expect to find great Cadillacs like a black 2012 CTS with only 365 miles, the silver 556 HP CTS-V Coupe, and probably the 2011 Escalade Hybrid Platinum. Low-mileage, one-owner, pristine Cadillacs in the Western Region's number one Cadillac dealer. That's a no-brainer. But how about cars like a 2011 Mercedes E350 Black Convertible or 2003 Porsche Boxster S with only 11,000 miles? Or check out the 2008 Audi TT sports car with 12,000 miles. And don't overlook the silver 2011 Camaro SS Convertible. Folks, it's not rocket science. You sell a lot of new luxury Cadillac cars and SUVs, then you trade for a lot of low-mileage, one-owner vehicles. Stop in, check out the entire inventory. See what I mean? Legends, it's like no place else.
Imus in the Morning. Independent Talk. 1100 KFNX.
What do a party in the county jail? Prisoners that was there, they begin to wail. The prisoners jumping down, the joint begin to swing. You should have heard Dr. Jimmy say
Welcome back to Legalese. This is Jack Willinchek. Dennis had to step out for a moment. As usual, his duty calls. But for the first half of the hour, we were talking to Senator Byron Dorgan about his new book, Blowout. And one of the plot elements in Blowout is that a new technology has been discovered where coal can be processed using microbes that is actually based on a true story. And here to talk to us about the true story is Dustin Bly-Zephyr, who is the editor-in-chief for WIOfile.com. Dustin, are you on the line? Are you on the line with us?
I am.
Why don't you tell us about this story? I know it involves a high school student, Tiffany Clark, who was doing her science project when she first came across this. So tell us the story.
Yeah, well, the story starts way back in the 1970s when coal mining in the Powder River Basin really took off. And the coal mines had to dewater the coals ahead of their mining production so that the water wouldn't flood their pits. And when they dewatered the coal through water wells, they noticed that a lot of methane gas came with the water. And for many years, they thought that the methane gas just didn't add up to a commercial volume, and they simply vented it into the air. And in the 1990s, some folks figured out that they could get commercial volumes of methane gas and sell it into the market. And, you know, this is gas that, you know, once you take the water out, it's ready to put in a pipe and sell.
Right, right. So they first discovered it, you said, hundreds of years ago, or?
Well, yeah, there's always been coal mined in Wyoming and in the Powder River Basin for as long as man's been here, as far as we know.
And they first discovered this effect when they were doing this, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah, and when the coal bed methane industry really started to take off in the late 1990s, there were a lot of questions about the origins of the methane. Some people thought that it was thermogenically produced, in the coal.
Meaning, what does thermogenically produced mean?
That means that heat and pressure would basically cook the gas out of the coal.
Right.
While others thought, no, maybe that it was a microbial process, that there were bugs in the coal and in the water, and when the bugs fed on the coal, they produced methane gas.
Okay.
And what Tiffany Clark did in a high school experiment was she took a series of coffee cans and she took different samples of coal, and she put some coal in some distilled water, some coal in some coal bed methane water, and through this series of experimentation, she was able to prove that it was a microbial process.
Right, that it wasn't, like you were saying before, the heat, it wasn't thermogenic. It was actually some bugs that were making gas out of the coal.
And more importantly, she helped establish that the microbes were still there, and they were still generating methane. So this got people pretty excited about the possibility of, you know, once they deplete the first phase of gas, that they could possibly manipulate the microbes and the coal to generate a second generation of gas. And so this brought a lot of attention to the Powder River Basin and to Tiffany Clark, too, by the way.
Yeah, I got to give her some credit. I think my my high school science experiment was just putting a little action figure in some Jell-O, and I pretended like it was a cryogenic, a cryogenic door or something. Dennis, by the way, we're talking to Dustin Bly-Zephyr, who's editor-in-chief of WYOfile.com. He's telling us about the story of Tiffany Clark, who's the high school student that discovered that coal-eating microbes can produce methane gas.
Yeah, which apparently, I don't know if you heard this part, is the subject pretty much of this science fiction thriller that Senator Dorgan, who was on with us earlier today, has written a book about. And I don't think when he did that, he was really aware of this experiment by this young girl. He indicated he was not really aware of it. He was aware of some other independent, I guess.
He was aware of the idea.
Yeah, he was aware of the idea. So the question is she the first one that came up with this idea?
She wasn't the very first. There were a few people who had an inkling that maybe it was a microbial process. But hers was, I spoke with her teacher at the time, Brent Daly. I spoke with him today, and he said that her experiment was probably the most direct research at the time to show that it was a microbial process, and that those microbes were still alive today and still producing methane. And so what she did is she gave a lot of confidence to the idea that, well, maybe we could manipulate these microbes. Hmm. And that idea soon was behind the formation of at least two companies who are still currently pursuing this process.
Yeah, and that would be, I don't know if you mentioned this already because I had to step out for a minute, but is that LUCA?
Yeah, it'd be LUCA Technologies and Cirrus Energy.
Yeah, tell us about them. Who are they? Because we tried to get somebody from at least one of them on the air, I think LUCA, and they wouldn't be on the air for some reason. So maybe what they're doing they think is so high tech that they can't talk about it.
So experimental, they couldn't, so they couldn't comment.
Right. Well, LUCA is based in Colorado, and I believe Cirrus is based in Colorado as well. LUCA hired some PhDs to take this scientific experiment even further. And so they worked with this idea in the lab a lot. I mean, the main question was, okay, these microbes are generating methane gas, but can we get them to generate enough gas in a short amount of time to keep these coal bed methane wells commercially viable? Now, LUCA believes it can. Cirrus, I think, has been operating in parallel, doing the same sort of thing. They have two slightly different approaches. LUCA wants to introduce nutrients into the coal to stimulate the microbes and hope that that helps speed up the conversion process, whereas Cirrus wants to break down, they have a slightly different idea. They want to break down the coal to speed up the microbial process. And what they're working with is they're working with an existing network of coal bed methane wells and the pipelines and electricity and roads and the entire network that was built over the last 15 or so years. What's happened is there was a huge coal bed methane production boom in the Powder River Basin. From about 1998 to about 2008, they drilled 30,000 wells. They had to produce a lot of water from the coals because the coals exist in a freshwater aquifer. And that water production, which that water just ended up on the surface, some landowners liked it. They used it for watering their cows. Others really disliked it because it wasn't good for their crops. But nonetheless,
let me ask you something, because we just got about a minute before our break. But the question that I have is, the question we're trying to get to the answer of, what do we do with all this coal reserve in the United States now? Because it's not going to be used for coal-fired power plants anymore. That's done. And so we got all this coal, and we don't want to burn it. So the question is, can we apply something to it, these microbes, whatever, that realistically can emit certain gases that we can trap to convert to energy, clean energy? And is that something realistic, or it's my understanding, like with this girl's experiments, that it would take many, many years or eons even to generate that much gas? And that's exactly what these two companies you mentioned are trying to do, which they're trying to speed up that process. Is that reality or is it fiction?
Well, whether or not we can speed up the process through these microbial injections and stimulations remains to be seen. There's been some pilot tests done. But it's never been produced commercially yet.
Yeah.
So the jury's still out on that. I would say that coal mining is not done in the United States. We'll be mining coal in the Powder River Basin for a long, long time to come. We simply just won't be breaking records in the Powder River Basin like we have for almost 15 years in a row.
Yeah.
However, there are many ways. This is one way to use an existing network that's already out there.
All right.
But there's also underground coal gasification.
All right, well, let's talk about that when we come back from the break. This is Dennis Wilenchek and Jack Wilenchek on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. And after these commercial messages, we'll be back talking about the energy issues in the United States.
Independent Talk 1100 KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilenchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilenchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilenchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Every day is a holiday in Healthy Habit Health Food Store, 6029 North 7th Street. Tune in to Healthy House Call discussing the latest breakthroughs of integrative medicine. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. and call with your questions, 602-266-1000. Discover world-class physicians, medical researchers, Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, and testimonials from our patients and consumers of natural products. Call 602-266-1000.
Have you looked in your jewelry box lately? If you're like most people, chances are you'll have all kinds of jewelry, gems, and diamonds that you no longer wear, or watches that no longer work. If these items would be more valuable to you as cash, come to London Gold, the jewelry store smart shoppers have trusted for over 30 years. With gold at an all-time high, now is the time to let London Gold buy from you. Stop by one of our three valley-wide locations where our precious metal specialists are always on hand to evaluate your items. We will carefully test and examine each piece to determine its weight and current market value. Then we will make you an offer. If you accept, we'll pay you on the spot, and there's never any pressure to sell. Walk away anytime. No charge, no hassle. And if something in our showroom catches your eye, you can take advantage of our 20% bonus offer towards a new purchase. Imagine, in one visit, you can trade in old style for new ones and take home cash to boot.
London Gold, it's the best.
Independent Talk, 1100, KFNX.
I try to sleep, they're wide awake, they won't let me alone.
This is Dennis Wilenchek and Jack Wilenchek, and we're here on Legalese every week, 4 to 5, Independent Talk Radio, 1100 KFNX. And we're talking this week we just talked with Senator Byron Dorgan from North Dakota, talking about the energy situation in a novel he wrote. And now we're talking with Dustin Bleizeffer, who is the editor-in-chief for WyoFile.com. Dustin, I don't know if Jack asked you this earlier because I had to step out for a minute, but what is WyoFile.com, and how does that convert to making money? In other words, how do you make money off of it?
We're an online, independent, nonprofit news organization, relatively new, and so you know, we've embarked into this whole new online world where we don't compete with the daily newspapers here in Wyoming. What we do is we provide more in-depth reporting and in-depth coverage of complex issues, and then we give it to local media to use for free.
Okay.
And so we go after foundation grants.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, we had Senator Dorgan on who's telling us that North Dakota is a boom town. It's gone crazy there now with oil because of this shale and these new methods that weren't available 10 years ago that have just transformed the state into, literally a gold mine and an oil mine, I should say. But now you're in Wyoming, and what about Wyoming? Doesn't it have large untapped reserves of oil as well?
Yeah, it's all a matter of what the price is. The low price for natural gas right now is just killing the Powder River Basin coal bed methane gas producers because they take a discount because of their location. They take an even bigger discount before they sell their gas on the commercial market. So a lot of these coal bed methane gas wells in the basin have been uncommercial. So,
what about the shale concept? I mean, is that true up in Wyoming?
Yeah, what we have is we have tight sands gas, not shale gas.
I see.
We have tight sands gas in the Jonah Field, Pinedale, Anticline, Wamsutter, all over Wyoming, and a lot of that tight sands.
Yeah.
Gas was unlocked in the 1990s, and that's where Halliburton and a lot of companies really made quantum leaps in their hydraulic fracturing techniques. A lot of that was tried out in Wyoming, and then it was transported to shale gas.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to get to. Is Wyoming now also a hotbed of oil production activity?
Well, yeah. Now that gas prices are down and oil is still up around $100, people are switching from their gas plays to oil, and they're scouring Wyoming for...
So that's what's driving it now.
Yeah. The Niobrara is really hot on the Colorado side, and they expect that drilling activity to creep across the border into Wyoming as well. And we are seeing an uptick in deep oil drilling in the southern Powder River Basin.
What do you see as the next big thing to happen in this energy world? You know, Byron Dorgan was saying, you know, look, you know, when we were younger, we didn't know anything about cell phones or internet at all. Now look at it. It's crazy. And so who can predict some of these things? But what do you see, because you're out there looking at this issue, as the next, you know, practically speaking, the next big thing to happen? Because we know there are some technologies, but the cost, again, of extraction and or of production is so high. So is there anything on the horizon that you see as exciting?
Yeah, I think they're going to continue to chase shale oil as long as the oil price is up. And the next big thing that most people haven't heard about yet, maybe, is ROZs, residual oil zones. And what that is when you have an oil reservoir, typically the most fluid stuff is at the top, and that's the easiest to get. They knew that there's a lot more sludgy type of oil down below. Now that the industry's gotten so good with their completion technologies and their hydraulic fracturing, they're able to figure out ways to get that thicker, sludgy oil to move into a production well. Mm. And residual oil zones, that will attract drillers back into established oil fields, but also in some greenfield areas where they had, you know, had drilled some wildcat wells, found something a little too sludgy, but they didn't forget it was there. And they'll go back there as long as the price of oil is high. I don't believe that they're going to stop drilling natural gas because it is it's available and they know how to do it.
Well, I mean, the whole point that I'm getting to is this. We keep hearing about alternative energy sources. We keep talking about, you know, this warming of the atmosphere, et cetera. You know, and you hear arguments on both sides. And certainly the president is trying to move us away from these conventional sources of energy. So is that going to be reality given the technologies we're developing, moving away from just extracting more oil? Is there something completely different on the horizon that you've seen in your studies that is going to be potentially the next salvation to get us away from all these conventional sources of energy?
No, I don't see a silver bullet. I think there's going to be a huge, huge effort in energy efficiency across the board.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing about all this new drilling for oil is we're drilling more oil because the price is high.
Right.
Now, that means the customer still is paying a high price.
Right.
Yeah, it's good for tax revenue. You know, state of Wyoming loves that, and North Dakota is really enjoying that aspect of it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems odd to me, frankly, that with all of the technology that we have in the world today, as we said, some of the amazing breakthroughs in technology, that we're still kind of, you know, back in, you know, the beginning, really, you know, with oil and our dependence on oil. It just seems odd to me that we can't wean ourselves away from that in some technological fashion that somebody's come up with that's better. Now, my son here drives an electric car, but ultimately you still have to generate the electricity. So,
yeah.
You know, we're trying to look for ways to generate that energy, you know, that doesn't come from, again, these conventional sources. As I mentioned earlier, Byron Dorgan, somebody here at the station was showing me, somebody from Australia has come up with sort of a magnetic engine that generated some 400 horsepower. You know, so again, we can't possibly foresee some of these things because we're limited in our knowledge.
Well, I get a phone call once in a while from a man in Michigan who wants to tap the geothermal resources in Yellowstone. And he claims that the power from that could power all of North America.
Well,
but I don't think that's going to happen.
The
answer is really kind of a boring answer. Instead of being heavily reliant on coal or oil or gas or anything, a utility is going to really want to spread out its portfolio of fuels. So because these commodities ride high and they ride low, they don't want to get hit on natural gas. They don't want to get hit on coal. They're going to spread out their portfolio, and they're really going to concentrate on efficiency.
Yeah. Well, I still hold hope that there's some kid in some high school like Tiffany Clark, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah, that may be smarter than all of us and comes up with something that amazes us that we never thought of before that requires maybe some magnetic reactions or something that produce some kind of waves that produce energy. I still think that's going to happen because, you know, we just can't keep being dependent on these archaic sources of energy, it seems to me. At some point, you know, down the road, that's got to run out or become so expensive that it's really not practical anymore. As you say right now, I don't see it on the horizon, but, you know, who saw the internet on the horizon 20 years ago, right?
Right. You know, the point is, though, we do still have a huge wealth of fossil fuels in the West. It's just how are we going to use them in a cleaner way?
Yeah.
There's a number of different ways that you've heard of advanced coal technologies where you can strip the CO2 and some of the pollutants before it ever gets to a smokestack. These are expensive processes, but you know, we're not seeing a lot of other cheaper alternatives.
So, yeah, and as I said earlier on the show, the EPA apparently is issuing certain regulations that are probably going to put coal-fired power plants out of business in the future. So who knows where we're going with this. But I do want to end this segment because I want to spend a minute or two talking about something else. So we appreciate Mr. Bleizeffer, Dustin, having you on the show. And thanks, and we'll call on you again and see where we are on this issue.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to mention, I just noticed before I ran down here that Dick Clark passed away. Many of you have seen it on TV that are at home. I worked with Dick Clark on the $20,000 pyramid as a page when I was a kid at CBS, and he was a great gentleman, a great individual, a friend to a lot of people, including people that were, like me, just a page. Strangely enough, he had the foulest language and bluest language I've ever heard of anyone. But he somehow came off as the kid next door. But he was a tremendous entertainer, and by the way, a very brilliant businessman. He was one of the wealthiest guys in Hollywood, owned more records and companies and music from entertainers than anyone out there. But a tremendous individual, and I just noticed that at 82 years old, he passed away today. So anyway, Jack, we'll see you next week, and our guests will not see them, but hopefully they'll hear us. So you all take care, and have a good week. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Picture a small, premature baby coming out of surgery and calming within a few minutes after listening to beautiful harp music. Less pain medication is needed, and the baby is able to get home sooner. The Harp Foundation provides therapeutic harp music for the essential healing, comfort, and well-being of individuals in crisis or with special needs from pre-birth to the end of life. That's what the Harp Foundation does in our various hospitals, hospice, school, and outreach programs. To find out more, visit our website at theharpfoundation.org.
The largest financial transaction of your life is too important to place into the hands of just any lender. You need a lender that has competitive rates and a variety of loan programs. You need a lender that answers your questions in days instead of weeks. You need a lender that is with you every step of the way. You need Waterstone Mortgage. Let Waterstone Mortgage take the stress out of purchasing your new home. Call 480-635-3000. 480-635-3000. 480-635-3000.
You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cape Creek, Phoenix, the home of Laura Ingraham, weekdays 6 to